that this show is glass. Is it all glass?
Yes, it is. It's all glass.
Yeah, I say that just because sometimes you've done photography and prints, and you've done a lot of different things.
Yes, I have.
But they are kind of all related.
They are. I love materials. I love working in different medium. And I think it's interesting to learn something different to express a certain idea. And it's I enjoy a... you know, coming up with a new way of expressing myself.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying I enjoyed learning new things. So that means, like, for instance, when you took on the print thing and the photography thing, was that like, had you done that before?
I've done photography for years, and I did printmaking as an undergraduate in New Jersey, and then studied at the Museum School in Boston and did more printmaking, lithography, etching. Then did a master's at the California College of Art in Oakland, and that was also in printmaking, but it focused on doing monotypes, which is more like painting and printing on paper.
Well, what about the glass thing? I mean, when did you start that?
The glass thing, at the California College of Art, I did glass blowing with Marvin Lepofsky, who was the head of the glass department at the time. But I didn't like working with the heat of the furnaces and ended up doing some cast glass and then worked in cast paper for a number of years, which turned into cast bronze. So I've always been making objects and working somewhere between two and three dimensional work.
So what you're saying when you say cast objects or cast bronze, you're making something. Tell us just a little bit. Maybe what we should do is start with this show that's up right now at Ogden Gallery.
All right.
And just talk about what we see there. I would say I see two or three different sort of bodies of work. There are the gates that are on the walls, and then there, which are sometimes a diptych, sometimes four. And then there's also these gates that are freestanding sculpture in a way.
Right.
Right?
So this body of work came from my photographs. For the last few years, I have been photographing birds and then dissecting the birds with color. So I have a photograph of a real bird, and then around that bird, put it in a field of colors that the bird is comprised of. Mm-hmm. So you look at a bird and say, well, that's a white bird with a yellow beak, but really that bird has hundreds of colors. And I would dissect the bird in color around the bird, so it would be geometry and nature. And then about 3 years ago, I was invited by Dan Schwauer, who owns Bullseye, to come and take a tour of the Bullseye factory. I was at a talk at the Bullseye Gallery downtown, and I went to the factory and thought that it was the coolest thing I've seen in Portland. I just could not believe that factory, which is one of the biggest producers of art glass in the world, was right here in Portland. Mm-hmm. And to me, it seemed like an interesting way to bring together sculpture and painting and photography, and bringing those images onto a two-dimensional plane. And I love the color of the glass and being able to bring that into it.
So you're telling us that you did glass with the birds first before you did this Venice show?
Yes.
Okay. And that was kind of your introduction to the way you're doing glass now?
Yes.
So... well, then let's just keep with that for a little while.
All right.
Let's keep with that, because I had some questions or observations about the birds. So there was a kind of two different. So basically what you did was you took a photograph of a bird and you then did these incredible backgrounds, geometric backgrounds. Then what I saw was there was the silhouette of the bird with some fabulous color, and the photographic image of the bird was no longer there. It became...
more the idea of bird.
Yes.
And the idea of the bird to me is a bit of wildlife that we see in our urban environment. How much wildlife is left? We have squirrels, birds, and to me, birds are representative of freedom escape, wildlife that we can still appreciate and enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And birds have always been important.
Do you have them in your backyard? How about, I mean, what's your personal relationship with birds?
I love birds. I have a bird. I have a cockatiel.
Oh, nice.
A great companion. I recommend it.
Uh-huh.
And I also have three different bird feeders, a few bird houses. So I feed the birds all winter.
Yeah, I did too when I had a house. It was a big, big part of my life. So the birds that you used in your prints, were they in any way related to ones you knew or worked with or lived around, or what
really
did they mean to you, those birds?
The birds, I love going to natural history museums. Uh-huh. And when I travel to a city, I try and visit that natural history museum. And I found a particularly great collection at the Peabody in Harvard, at mm-hmm. Harvard in Cambridge. And I photographed those birds and used that as a launching point for that body of work.
Oh, so there's already kind of this distance between it, because you were using birds that were in the Natural History Museum. So it's not like you're photographing out of your backyard or anything. They're already this object.
They are an object.
Yeah.
And then I fix up the birds with Adobe Photoshop. You can make a grungy 100-year-old bird really sing.
And so that was kind of your first process with it?
Right.
Right. And then how did you make those? So then these birds are placed in kind of a grid of op art color, kind of, sort of.
Yes.
How did you arrive at that, and how do you make that?
In the drawings, in the photographs?
Well, just in those prints, you know, in the work that I saw at Ogden Gallery. How did you make that part? I mean, I'm hearing you found how you did the bird. How did you do the rest of it?
Well, I was interested in an abstract version of that bird,
mm-hmm.
and took ellipses as a shape. I just love geometry and geometric shapes, and felt that the ellipse and circle were still kind of organic shapes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started by hand taking colors that were in the bird and making the field of ellipses around the bird in those colors.
Mm-hmm.
So in a given drawing, I might have 100 or 150 ellipses of different colors that were in the bird. And in the process of dressing up my birds in Adobe Photoshop and making them new and beautiful, I started sampling the colors through Adobe Photoshop. And where with my Prismacolor pencils, I maybe had 100 colors, with uh-huh. Adobe Photoshop, it became infinite.
Yeah.
And I got very excited about that.
Yeah.
And just started doing all of it with Adobe Photoshop and color sampling and making the prints that way.
And so you have an image. So let's say you're looking at your screen and, you know, your image could be maybe just a few inches by a few inches. What were the changes then? What were the surprises when you saw the actual prints? Was it Phil Bard who made your prints?
Yes, Cirrus. Cirrus.
Cirrus Digital. So.
Hello, Phil. Love you.
Hello, Phil. We love you. So Cirrus Digital is a place owned by Phil Bard, who's known for being able to make our dreams come true. Let's put it that way. What kind of surprises or new problems, issues, whatever, did you come to when there was the print in front of you?
Well, I found that thrilling to see where a photograph of the bird, you have little bits and little hints of color. It's almost like an impressionist painting,
mm-hmm.
where you have all of those dots and pixels, and they come together and form an image. And to separate them out into larger chunks of color was very exciting to just see it become almost this solid thing instead of bits of color forming an image, to see all those pieces floating around the bird, which is why I think I then led into the series of glass pieces, because there you have the bird then as this solid piece, mm-hmm. and you also have the colors floating around the bird.
When you did the glass thing, so when you moved into glass, and we'll just stick with birds here for a moment, did you have to work with a master glass? What was that process like? You know, I've often thought that I would have loved to have made versions of my paintings into glass. And I knew I'd have to find a, you know, genius glass person to help me. What was it like? What happened with you?
Well, that was pretty thrilling, because after my tour with Dan at Bullseye, he said, well, what do you really want to do with glass? And I made a conscious choice of not looking at other glass artists and seeing what they had done, because I thought, well, that will be upsetting and daunting. Mm-hmm. So I thought I would just find my own way with it.
Stick with your vision.
And I took classes at Bullseye, kind of introductory classes to cutting glass, kiln forming, and different processes. And I find that glass is surprising, but it's also very unforgiving. So you have to be very careful in your process to get a good outcome.
It's not like you can paint over on top and top again the way sometimes a painter will do.
Right.
You don't have those chances.
Well, you do have those chances, but it's always kind of laborious to get there because then you have to refire it, do another step, and so things end up taking days and days to fix if you can.
Right.
But I also found that interesting because I started then refiring pieces, cutting them up, and what I kept trying to get was my bird in glass. And so I found I wanted to make really complex shapes, which it's almost impossible to do that manually. Uh-huh. And I found this great guy, Jim Ladd, at Portland Waterjet, and he's working with another fellow, Jason, who do glass cutting with water jet process, and you take your image and you put that into a digital format, plug it into a computer, and then that cuts out the glass in an intricate shape, which I then reassemble and fuse. And sometimes that gets cut up and reassembled a number of times.
Interesting. All right, so let's move on to just Venice here for a moment. By the way, I want to remind you all you're listening to KBOO Portland. My name is Ava Lake, and this is Art Focus. If you want more information about this show, you can go to kboo.fm/artfocus, and you can see links to my past interviews. I've been here about, 5 or 6 years. I'm now sharing this show with Joseph Gallivan. Big shout out to him. It's been great having a partner in the show. I have with me today Mary Chomenko Hickley, who has a show right now at
Augen
Gallery. How could I forget that? AUGEN Gallery.com, where I have shown before.
Bravo.
And hopefully we'll show again. Anyway, and your show, Mary, that you have now, Gates of Venice, Pattern and Color, Studies in Pattern and Color. Okay, what happened with you in Venice? How did we get to that? Going from birds to sort of a locale.
Well, in the bird series, instead of using the ellipses in the background of the bird, I took some patterns that I found on a Moroccan wall in Morocco, love pattern. So you travel around the world and just see how people use pattern, how it's an important part of their tradition and society. And I took this pattern from a Moroccan wall and used that as a ground for my bird because I wanted to put the bird in a different culture.
Right.
So I just transported him right to Morocco. And I
think I've seen images of this show. You had a bunch of things that were based on these Middle Eastern patterns, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And that whole idea of pattern and how people take a discrete element and repeat it seemed pretty intriguing. So it goes back to kind of pop art and taking some element and then seeing where that's your leaping off point of saying, okay, now I have this defined, and now I can look at color from this perspective. So Gates, I took that same idea of taking a pattern and took elements from metal gates in Venice and in Nice, took the pattern, and then...
Why specifically those two cities? I mean, I could get... I mean, it's really weird you mention that, because Nice is a place I've been many times. Why Nice? I mean, I guess I get Venice, but...
Okay, I was there, and was just struck by how many metal gates there are, how much metal work there is everywhere.
Yeah.
And I, having worked in bronze for about 15 years, really love metal. And I looked at, what are those gates doing? Are they keeping me in, keeping somebody out? Is it about public, private? So I was intrigued with the notion of gates. And they seem to use gates a lot more than we do in the United States. Everyone has a gate or a metal fence and just delineate their space that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been photographing gates for years, and it just seemed like right now, at this point, it became important to do something with that. I have archives of thousands of photographs.
Yeah.
Kind of scroll through them and say, well, what's important now? And
yes.
Things always bubble up, and you get intrigued by an idea and feel like, oh, wow, I've just discovered this. But then you look back at your history and you realize, no, I already have hundreds of pictures of gates.
Isn't that
so
wild?
It's a great archive. And, you know, we're always taking in information, and you can't process all of it all at the same time. And so at different points, things become important, and that's what you focus on.
You know, I find it's so interesting what you're telling me now, because I personally am doing exactly the same thing right now. I am working with something that I'm thinking, whoa, I'm really into this now, but actually I was into it as a child.
Right.
Yes, as a child. Yeah, so just kind of, you know, the full circle. You know, even though there may be layers and layers and layers of documentation. And don't you find that that is so rewarding when you do that? Like, isn't this making you extremely happy?
Yes, and you think that you have just come up with this, but realize, oh, no, I've really been thinking about this for 20 years,
mm-hmm.
but I'm just thinking about it differently now.
But also you're able to do it really well because
right.
you've had all that experience around it, education around it, and just all the skills.
Right.
So let's just talk a little bit about the show then. It's at Ogden Gallery. First of all, let's just hit the freestanding sculptures. So these are like a plate of glass, but many, many pieces of glass that look like pattern painting. Well, tell me about them. Talk to me about them.
Those, the pattern pieces, a lot of them have Moroccan patterns,
mm-hmm.
and they were a transitional body of work between the gates and the birds.
Uh-huh.
Somehow I got very intrigued with the patterns and what I could do with those, reconfiguring them, cutting them up, adding new color, and it really became about color. So the bird fell off. The bird is gone for the
yeah.
moment. He's still out there somewhere. But
how did your audience feel about that? I mean, like, I'm someone who did a representational work and then went to the abstract, and I gained some people and lost some people. What happened with you?
Well, people are always kind of sad to see what you've left behind, especially your family. It's like, no, you just started working on those birds. But I feel like, no, I've really been working with birds for decades.
Long time. Yeah.
And, you know, I think that you have to do what interests you at the time and not uh-huh. what other people expect you to do.
Right. So I'm talking with Mary Chomenko Hinckley, who has a show at Ogden Gallery right now, Gates of Venice and Beyond. We're talking about studies in color and pattern. So are you telling me that those freestanding gates, those freestanding glass sculptures, are those collaged? How did you make that? So imagine, people, if you can, it's like an abstract painting that's sort of geometric, but with organic component to how it's shaded, and it's pretty sensual, pretty direct and geometric, but sensual. So you're saying that's actually a collage of glass.
Yes. So I'll take a sheet of glass, cut it into a pattern that might have 100 pieces of glass. Like mm-hmm. If you had a piece of glass that was 20 by 20 inches, mm-hmm. it might then end up being, I don't know, 50 or 75 pieces by the time it's finished.
Uh-huh.
And then I have a number of pieces that are cut up like that and then work with them like a jigsaw puzzle.
Nice.
Fuse that and work with colors and just seeing what reverberates.
Mm-hmm.
And then take that, often we'll cut that up again, mm-hmm. and then add more color, add more glass, maybe make it more dimensional, fuse it again, and then sometimes I will slump it, which is putting it back in a kiln, but at a lower temperature, just so you get a shape and not have it completely become a liquid again.
Right. That must be fun.
It's really fun.
So, but you have to be somewhere else to do all this, right? You're not doing this all at home, are you?
No, I have a studio, and this I've been working at Bullseye,
right.
which is really wonderful because there's a resource there. I like working in collaboration. I like having other people around. So sometimes being an artist is a lonely endeavor.
I'll say.
And one of the great things about working with bronze, you're at a foundry. There are artisans, there are craftspeople, and I think it's just very exciting to work with a group of people. And I found that to be true with at Bullseye Glass, mm-hmm. that they are eager to have you learn that process. And but this summer, I got my own kiln, and I was afraid of burning down the neighborhood, but
You're doing it.
But I'm doing it, and which is really great. So I do work until all hours of the night now.
Yeah.
But it's pretty great.
Nice.
So I still work at Bullseye when I have bigger pieces that don't fit in my kiln.
Uh-huh.
But I like that.
So talk to us a little bit about the pieces on the wall. So some of them were a diptych, as I recall. Okay, there was this one, Venice Gates Purple Gold. So what you've done is you're talking about what it is, and then you name it off by color. Is that kind of your way of identifying the pieces?
Because it becomes, for me, it's easy to identify those pieces mm-hmm. by the color, because that is the thing that is very distinctive about them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about color. It's about place. And Venice has so many churches. That particular one, with a purple and gold, those are royal colors. You think of those as maybe religious colors, ancient colors of royalty, and also they're colors that are striking when they're next to each other, yellow and purple. And so it was I had a lot of references and a lot of reasons for it to be gold and purple.
Yeah. Beautiful piece, too. I have to say, all of those pieces, some of them are very simple, where it truly is just two colors, or it feels like it anyway. I know you're probably doing a spectrum within a color, but because there's a glow. But then you have other ones where you're kind of combined the freestanding gate with the image on the wall. Do you know what I'm saying? You're combining pattern with a predominant shape. Are those kind of the final pieces? It almost seems like you came to that point. No?
Well, which ones are you specifically?
Well, you have some, for instance, where you've got the shape of the gate, right? This beautiful shape, and then that's it within a two or three color thing. Then you've got pieces where you've got that, but you've combined it with the multicolored images, like the freestanding sculptures. In other words, they seem the most complex, the most like you've taken all of your ideas and put them together. In my artist's mind, I'm imagining how you progressed in this show. But
Some people say less is more. For me, more is always better.
I loved it all. It's all beautiful.
Exactly. What's your favorite color? I love every color. So those pieces are more complex. And I just, the question is, well, what happens if I do this? And, mm-hmm. So my tendency really is toward complexity.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a mathematical challenge as well to keep everything straight.
Yeah.
To because things end up being so many pieces and so many patterns and so many steps. But I really enjoy that part of it.
That part of the challenge.
But because of that, I was kind of going down that road of complexity and color.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed important then to ground the show with place, which is why I ended up doing photographs on the glass.
Right. Talk to us a little bit about that. You even had a sample that you had brought with you. So it looks like you've taken a photograph and embedded it in glass?
Yes.
Or what have you done?
So this is going back to the tradition of stained glass, mm-hmm. where you take enamel and you paint on the glass and then fire it. Mm-hmm. And in my case, I thought it was really important to make the photographs that were my initial inspiration of these gates and gardens and the Grand Canal in Venice, and doing a process of silk screening the image on glass.
Very nice.
And that way you either put enamel, liquid enamel on the glass where you're screening it, mm-hmm. or you are putting glass powder on the piece of glass and then firing it. And this way the material, either the enamel or the powder, actually sinks into and gets embedded in the glass, and you have this great light that comes from the glass when it's fused, kind of like early daguerreotypes.
Yeah, it has where an you old have a, antique quality.
And you have this dimensionality and this light emitted from the surface that you really just don't get by printing on paper.
Beautiful. Those are nice.
Thank you.
So I've been talking with Mary Chomenko Hinckley. She's got a show at Ogden Gallery. We're going to kind of wrap this up.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Mary, for joining me.
Thank you. And may I say that the images of this work are on Ogden Gallery's website.
Yes.
And the show is up until December 24th.
Okay.
You would like to go and see it.
All right. So you've still got a little while to see it. And that's AUGENgallery.com. That's right in the DeSoto building in the Pearl District. And there's actually a lot of work in this show. I don't even know if all of the images are online. You have an amazing array of work that's in this exhibition. I wanted to let you know that, I'm not still sure who my show is going to be for December 31st, the final day of this year, but I do know then that in January I'm going to have Bruce Gunther on, and we're going to be talking about the Francis Bacon triptych that's going to be at the Portland Art Museum of Lucian Freud. So that's some news that was just let out yesterday that triptych that went for a heck of a lot of money is going to come to a Portland Art Museum. And I'm a Bacon fanatic, so I'm really looking forward to that conversation that will be in January. Next week, of course, Joseph Gallivan will be your host for Art Focus. My name is Ava Lake. Thanks so much for listening to Art Focus. I'll be talking with you in a couple weeks.
I'm the last leaf on the tree. The autumn took the rest, but they won't take me. I'm the last leaf on the tree. When the autumn wind blows, they're already gone. And flutter to the ground cause they can't hang on. And there's nothing in the world that I ain't seen. I greet all the new ones that come in green. I'm the last leaf on the tree. And the autumn took the rest, but they won't take me. I'm the last leaf on the tree. They say I've got staying power here on the tree. But I've been here since Eisenhower, and I outlived even he. I'm the last leaf on the tree. The autumn took the rest, but they won't take me. I'm the last.
KABU is seeking a station manager to lead our dynamic 45-year-old non-commercial radio station. Ideal candidates will have nonprofit management experience, the ability to thrive and work collaboratively in a decentralized organization, and the ability to delegate, plan, and organize people to meet goals and objectives. If this interests you, please go to kboo.fm/ Station Manager Hire 2013.
You're listening to news headlines for Tuesday, December 17th on KBOO. Members of Parliament in Yemen passed legislation banning United States drone strikes in a vote on Sunday. The decision followed a drone attack on Thursday that killed at least 15 people. Yemeni officials maintain that the drones hit a wedding party of civilians and that none of those killed were Al-Qaeda operatives. Parliament's vote reflects the public's weariness with drone attacks and civilian casualties in Yemen. Although the decision by Parliament was nearly unanimous, Yemeni President Hadi can reject the measures, and it is unclear how the United States would respond to such a prohibition. British pharmaceutical company GlaxoSmithKline announced today a decision to stop compensating its sales representatives based on the number of prescriptions written by doctors. Additionally, the company reports it will no longer pay physicians to promote its products. This practice has been widely viewed as posing a conflict of interest between commercial interests and patient care. GlaxoSmithKline's decision comes during a bribery investigation in China, where police have accused the company of paying the equivalent of $494 million to encourage sales of its products. Last night, the Portland School Board unanimously approved a new charter school in North Portland. Kairos PDX is expected to open in August of 2014 with one kindergarten class and two first grade classes in the Kenton neighborhood. There are plans to expand over the course of several years, culminating in a kindergarten through fifth grade school by the 2018-2019